hump day, and it's afternoon, so that means we really are on the downhill slide into the weekend. And, well, at about 3:35 this afternoon, we'll talk with Bob Larson, and we'll find out what a first glimpse of what the weekend weather may look like. A lot of football this weekend. Western plays at home. If I sound a little groggy today, I was up late last night. I didn't get a lot of sleep. I was watching the Cruz cam as Ted Cruz made his fake filibuster and read green eggs and ham to the nation. There are excerpts of it out there on the internet, the highlights, so to speak. I found it a pretty humorous filibuster, I guess is what it should be called. He wasn't really filibustering. He said he was going to talk until he couldn't talk anymore. And it was Harry Reid who determined when he was going to stop talking. But he certainly did go for the fame last night as he read Green Eggs and Ham to the Nation as we teeter on the brink of shutting down the government. That was the wisdom he wanted to bring to the equation. I thought that was interesting. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, we're going to talk to Sarah Dutton. She's the guru of polling at CBS, and CBS and the New York Times just completed a poll, and we'll find out if there were any surprises in it for, I believe, the first time, and maybe she will correct me. The approval of Mr. Obama's foreign policy has dropped below 50%. And we'll find out if that is the first time. I believe he's been above most of his administration. We'll find out coming up in just a couple of minutes when Sarah Dutton joins us right here on 590 WKZO. We have 70 degrees in Kalamazoo, clear tonight and cold, a low of 46. It was 44 at my house this morning, so a couple of degrees warmer. We're having trouble setting up our call with Sarah Dutton, but technical difficulties will be overcome. About half of Americans disapprove of the way President Obama is handling foreign policy, a new high as he confronts a diplomatic opening potential with Iran and efforts to get chemical arms under UN control in Syria. That was one of the key results from the New York Times CBS News poll. 49% disapprove of President Obama's foreign policy efforts. And that's up 10 points since early June and a 40% approval. President's negative rating on foreign policy has grown with all Americans. Disapproval is up 8 points among Democrats, 10 points among Republicans, and interestingly enough, 13 points amongst the independents. And joining us now to see if we can make sense out of this is Sarah Dutton, the guru of polling at CBS. Hi, Sarah. How you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm just fine.
Good.
Mentioned that 49% of the country don't much care for President Obama's foreign policy.
That's right. 49% disapprove. That's the highest number we've recorded in our poll on this measure. And fewer, just 40% approve. And this is interesting because what we found in the past is that foreign policy has generally been a strong issue for the president. He has received pretty good marks on it in the past. He's certainly received negative evaluations for his handling of the economy, but foreign policy has been a strength for him, especially since the killing of Osama bin Laden.
Mm-hmm.
So to see these kind of negative, net negative ratings for him on foreign policy is really fairly noteworthy. It's something we haven't really seen much before.
Is this the first time that his approval has slip below 50% on foreign policy?
No, I believe he's been below 50% in the past, but generally, you know, he's 9 points more negative than positive, and that kind of that gap between positive and negative assessments of him is really pretty noteworthy because that disapproval number is so high.
Did the polling give you any specifics? Right now, foreign policy-wise, we've got both the potential breakthrough with talking to Iran, and we also have the Syria issue. Do we have any idea what's affecting his approval ratings the most?
Well, I do think that the situation in Syria and his handling of it has probably hurt his foreign policy rating overall. We find most Americans say that the administration has not explained U.S. goals in Syria, and we've also found in the last almost a year that we've been asking about it that consistently about 2 out of 3 Americans say the U.S. doesn't have a responsibility to get involved in the fighting in Syria. And in this poll, 26% say the U.S. does have that responsibility. 68% say it does not. And as I said, we've seen these numbers since we first began asking this question at the end of last year. And what's more, it's a majority of Republicans, a majority of Democrats, majority of independents who feel that the U.S. shouldn't get involved in fighting in Syria. So, I think opinion is pretty stable on this issue. It's consistent and it's widespread. And so I think the president's position earlier this month on Syria probably had an impact on his overall rating on foreign policy. And, most Americans do not want the U.S. to engage in military airstrikes against Syria. 57% say that in this poll.
Right.
It's pretty clear, I think, what Americans want, and that's been an issue.
Why do you think the independents were the focus of growth and disapproval?
Well, independents don't have the party allegiances that people who describe themselves as Democrats and Republicans do. And again, this is not how people are registered to vote. This is how people tell us they like to think of themselves. So independents don't have that partisan affiliation in their head. And their views on policy issues and on presidents do vary. They change from time to time. And so they swing around a little more than we see from Republicans and Democrats. Republicans and Democrats are generally pretty entrenched in their views, certainly when it comes to presidents. We found that during George W. Bush's presidency, Democrats, very few of them approved of the job he was doing. And the inverse is true now with President Obama, that very few Republicans approve of the job he's doing. So we like to look at those independents, you know, as to why they have been a little more volatile on this issue. They tend to be more volatile in general. But, you know, this is a war-weary country, and I think we're seeing some of that in the poll results as well.
We're talking with Sarah Dutton, the director of polling for CBS News. Sarah, sometimes in a poll that's as large as this one, there are some surprising nuggets buried in the poll. did you find anything that is worth noting that sort of surprised you in this poll?
Well, I think one of the things, I don't know if this is a surprise necessarily, but I think it's noteworthy, is when we talk, when we asked Americans their views on Iran, and, you know, we asked particularly about whether people think the recent diplomatic outreach efforts between the U.S. and Iran will have much of an effect on U.S. relations with them. 38% say they just don't have an opinion. They really don't know enough to say what's going to happen there. And I think that's in, that's noteworthy. Foreign policy issues are complicated, you know, very complicated sets of decisions and, you know, factors, and these are tough things to measure public opinion on because events are unfolding, and especially with Iran, and opinion just is difficult to measure because it's not formed fully yet.
Is that one of the reasons that independents' opinions change as quickly as they do, as some of these diplomatic efforts play out over weeks? You sort of get a sense where it's going, and you don't, at the get-go, have any idea what's going to happen.
I think that's true. And actually, I think that's a challenge for pollsters overall whenever we're polling on events that are unfolding while we're in the process of doing the poll. Of course, it's always, you know, valuable for us to measure the evolution of public opinion over time. But in any single poll that we're conducting as events are occurring, that's certainly a challenge for us. And I think that's not just limited to independents, but, you know, in terms of Americans, all Americans' views are sort of progressing and unfolding as the events unfold. You know, that said, certainly if it's a political issue that we're polling on, many times we can count on Republicans feeling one way about it, Democrats feeling the opposite way about it. We've certainly seen that on plenty of issues we've polled on in the past. Healthcare is a good example, and some economic issues as well.
Before I let you go, I need to ask, have you seen any polling or done any recent polling that gives an idea of the temperature of Americans on a potential shutdown next Monday?
Yeah, you know, we did. We put out a couple of poll questions on that topic this morning. We asked Americans whether threatening a government shutdown is an acceptable way for Congress to negotiate a budget. And we found 4 out of 5 Americans say that that is not an acceptable way to negotiate. Just 16% said it was. And in fact, majorities of Republicans, Democrats, and independents say that the threat of a government shutdown is not acceptable. We also saw real skepticism from Americans about whether Republicans in Congress are trying to work with the president and whether he's trying to work with them. He gets a little more credit than the Republicans in Congress do. But just 23% of Americans think the Republicans are trying to work with the president. 51% say the president is trying to work with them. So there's some evidence of the gridlock we're seeing in Washington here in our poll. But we'll have a lot more polling information about the government shutdown and Americans' views on it out at 6:30 this evening.
Hey, great. Thanks for taking the time to talk with us. I know this is a busy day for you, Sarah.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Have a good one.
You too.
Sarah Dutton, the guru of polling for CBS News. I say that with a smile on my face as a compliment. The woman knows her business. WKZO time is 3:22. 327 at 590 WKZO. Raj Taylor, hump day afternoon. We're on the downhill slide into the weekend. And in just a few minutes, we'll get a glimpse into the future and see exactly what kind of weather we may have this weekend. Gas prices are still continuing to decline. Up in Plainwell, not as low as they are in Kalamazoo, and that's not typical. $3.51 is the best price on the M89 strip. $3.49 at a number of stations along West Main and on Drake Road. The best price in Kalamazoo on Gull Road at $3.41. Let's see, what station is that? Well, I can't get it to separate on Gas Buddy. But there is a 341. Well, here's one I can tell you about, the Speedway on North Riverview Drive. But there's a 341 on Gull Road as well. That's the best price in the Kalamazoo area. Down Three Rivers Way, 354, the best price. That's at Meyer. If you're heading west, or I should say east on I-94, 345, the best price in Battle Creek. That's at 11 Mile and I-94, right there by the Fire Keepers Casino. But 341, the best price in Kalamazoo. And that gets us within a couple of pennies down to the gas prices we had before the most recent bump. Seems to me the last time I filled up was at 339. And so we're within a couple of cents of getting that price back. Hopefully, we will see the prices continue to drift southward. Predictions saying that we'll be in the 320s by the end of the year and not below $3 ever again, according to the most recent study that I saw. And that study predicted that we won't be seeing $3 or less than $3 gas anytime in the future. Coming up in the next hour, the latter part of the hour, we're going to talk to Ellen Lipton. She's a representative from the Detroit area, and we're going to talk to her about the Education Achievement Authority, and we're also going to touch on the core curriculum. Representative Lipton is active on both of those levels. Current research suggests that the big promises made by the Educational Achievement Authority are not happening, at least not happening in the way it was predicted to happen. And now we're considering opening up the Educational Achievement Authority to more school districts, bringing more school districts under control of the state. And we'll talk to Representative Ellen Lipton about that coming up at about 4:40 this afternoon. Sunny, 71 degrees. Here's CBS News. Another beautiful day in paradise. We could get used to this kind of weather. 40s at night, a little bit of fog in the morning that you get this time of year, 70s in the daytime. This is perfect. 70 degrees on the outside. Times of some clouds this afternoon, potentially, but sunny now, pleasant. Expected a high of 72, highest I've seen, 71. And clear tonight, 46 the low, sunny, warmer tomorrow, and again on Friday. Tomorrow's high, 76. We may approach 80 on Friday. And then a cool down. And that brings us to Bob Larson, who we'll talk to in just a couple of minutes. And he will give us an idea of what the weekend weather may look like. Coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to talk to Dan O'Neill. He is in charge of the Traverse City Conference on Michigan Election Reform. It's presented by the Michigan Campaign Finance Network, the Michigan Center for Election Law, and Common Cause Michigan. Leading experts on campaign finance and voting reform will be there to share ideas for how to fix our at least malfunctioning, if not broken, election system in this country. And we'll talk to Dan O'Neill about what this involves. And I know Jocelyn Benson, one of the people I most respect when it comes to talking about election law. She's the dean of the Wayne State University Law School. And I have talked to her on many occasions, going back to before she became a household name when she ran for the attorney general. The Secretary of State's office here in Michigan. And so we'll talk to Dan O'Neill in the 4 o'clock hour. But without further ado, the world's best weatherman.
Oh.
I just thought I'd throw that out there, Bob.
Wow, that's incredibly nice, not accurate, but very nice.
You send those checks to me. I just wanted you to know that you were getting something for your money.
Yes, you're a great publicist.
Yes, yes. What's our word for the day, Bob? Mine would be
That certainly works. The word that I have chosen is wonderful. It is a wonderful Wednesday.
Yes, it certainly is. And how long will the wonderful weather continue, and will it continue into the weekend?
Yes, it will. Wonderful weather right through Saturday. Our next chance of rain, we've talked about this for a few days now, appears to be Sunday. It might be a little faster. I'll call it now later Saturday night and Sunday morning is when we'll probably have showers. But that's not to take away from the rest of this week. And I still think Saturday during the day anyway is still fine, even if it's cloudy by nightfall. And it is going to be warming up slowly. We're going to get an 80 out of this before it's all said and done.
Yeah, okay. Is this likely the last 80 of the year, or are there chances as we move in through October?
There's another shot at it next week, the first week of October. We have the front that brings the showers late Saturday night, Sunday morning. It cools off only a bit behind it, cooling off back to where we were, say, yesterday and today. Lower 70s, nights in the 40s, and then it warms right back up again. And maybe by Tuesday or Wednesday next week, we're at least flirting with the 80-degree mark again.
Wow.
And then the next front that comes through late next week, that one probably is more significant. And if we do get an 80 next week, I'd say that would be the last one.
Okay. What's going on in Florida? Is any of this tropical, or is it just unrelenting thunderstorms coming off the Gulf of Mexico?
Unrelenting thunderstorms off the Gulf. There was a low that came off the Yucatan Peninsula and over the southern Gulf of Mexico, and it brought rain to East Texas Friday of last week. And there was all kinds of thinking that that would turn into a tropical system, if not a storm, at least a depression. Uh-huh. It never did, which kind of fits what's been happening this year, because it just this tropical season to this point has been a dud. Don't know if it'll hold that way.
Yeah.
Got a lot of territory yet to cover, but it never did develop tropically, but it still was a rain producer, and it's a very slow-moving area, low pressure, and now it's wreaking havoc over Florida, particularly central and northern Florida yesterday, central and south Florida today.
Bob, in your vast meteorological experience, have you seen a hurricane season this slow? And if it's this slow, this late in the season, is that a harbinger of the future? Are we going to likely have a slow season this year? Or have you seen them perk up after a slow start?
I have seen them perk up after a slow start, but this is even beyond a slow start at this point. I call this a slow start and a slow middle, given that we're this deep into the season. I have seen some late season activity a number of years that had otherwise been quiet. So, you know, we can't let our guard down. But I would suspect at this point it's just not going to be able to ramp up that much, not as much as have been forecasted by many people, including yours truly.
Yeah. Well, this will give weather people something to think about, how it is, what happened this year that apparently nobody suspected.
Right. There'll be a number of studies done on this. One of the biggest inhibitors of development earlier this summer, we heard a lot about Saharan dust. You hear a lot about that? Dry air that was coming in off of Africa. I think another thing would have to do with the position of the Bermuda High and the position of the high that's always in place over the Atlantic each summer, but is in a different location each summer. I think it's set up in a place other than it was expected to set up and was stronger than expected. Other years that have been quiet can be attributed oftentimes to El Nino. El Nino, while it produces bad winter weather and storms, is also something that inhibits tropical development, but we are not in El Nino, so that's not the case this time around.
Yeah, so we'll continue to learn more just how this spaceship we inhabit works.
Yeah, it's a never-going process.
Hey, thanks, Bob. You have a good afternoon.
Thanks. You too, Roger.
Talk to you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, a slow start to the hurricane season and not a slow end to the baseball season. How'd the Tigers do last night?
Well, they clinched a playoff spot for the third consecutive year with a 4-2 win last night over the Twins. Now they're looking to...
But I thought, didn't Cleveland win as well?
They clinched a playoff spot. They look for the outright title with either a win or a loss. The magic number for the division title is still one.
Okay.
But they've punched their ticket to the postseason for the third time. It's the first time that they've done this three consecutive years since you started watching baseball in 1907.
Yeah.
Between 1907 and 1909 was the last three-year streak for the Detroit Tigers. So a lot to celebrate, but a lot also to accomplish yet in the next couple of days. And they have one more series after this with Miami. So if they don't get that magic number down to zero in Minnesota, I think they're certainly going to do it in Miami.
Yeah. Neither team. Well, the Twins are more of a challenge than the Marlins, correct?
By a long shot. Yeah, the Twins have certainly been, not by record, but just been a thorn in the side of the Detroit Tigers all season. But it was nice because they were down early yesterday and they showed some resilience, which we haven't seen even in the latter stages from them. And so that was nice to see the bats come alive at the end to get the victory.
What was the score? See, I deliberately don't pay any attention, Carolyn, because I want to hear my sports direct from Dr. Sports.
Well, I might have to, I think I know where you're going. I might have to look were you going to ask about the Cleveland score?
No.
Oh, okay.
What was the score of the Tigers game last night?
4-2.
4-2.
I already said that twice.
Did you?
Yeah.
Now you said it three times.
Well, I said it three times.
You have to say it three times to get it to register with me.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it was 4-2. And Max Scherzer going tonight against, I don't know. Correa, I think. Yeah, Kevin Correa. That's who it is tonight. And Max
I love it when you admit on the air you don't know.
Wait a minute. Yeah. No, I read that earlier. Kevin Correa going for the Twins. Max Scherzer with the historical season that he's had would just be awesome for them to pull one out for him and get this division clinched up tonight.
Did you watch or listen to the game last night?
I did a little bit until I knew that they were still, that magic number was going to still be one. They weren't going to quite clinch it. I mean, not that I don't like to listen to them. I knew they were going to win, I knew the magic number was still going to be at one. And so,
because you knew at that point,
right,
Cleveland had won as well.
Right. So what I do, because, you know, since I work in the morning.
You went to bed.
I went to bed, but I kept Dan Dickerson on the radio. So, yeah. So I fell asleep to the fine tunes of Dan Dickerson and the Detroit Tigers winning when I went to bed. So.
All right. And so tonight, if they win.
They'll clinch.
And even if they lose and Cleveland loses, does Cleveland play tonight?
See, that's something I'm not sure. Another thing,
we get into the game calculation, and my mind boggles. But,
it is crazy. That half game calculation stuff is nuts. But let me look it up really quick if you want to ask me another question. Yeah, they're playing at home against the White Sox. I thought so.
Okay. How do they do against the White Sox?
Well, I mean, I think they are on top in the season series, if I'm not mistaken. But Cleveland is not a strong team, and so it's just surprising me. I mean, they're playing the spoiler, like I had said. I think you and I talked about that last week, and they're doing a fine job of playing the spoiler for the Tigers, because that magic number has been dwindling, but up until this point, they really haven't been able to chunk it out and really finish it off because Cleveland continues to win.
I have a lot of friends who follow sports, yourself included, and nobody is talking football this year. Am I the only one that notices that nobody is talking football? I have not.
I mean, we can talk football if you want me to. You told me to come in and talk Tigers. So
I know.
That's what I'm
doing. No. I want you to paint a broader picture of sports aficionados out there.
Okay.
Am I out in left field thinking that people aren't paying as much attention? And is it because the Tigers are marching their way to the playoffs, and if the Tigers were out of it, would people be talking football more?
I think so. I mean, I kind of think that goes without saying, and I think it could go the other way if they were running away with the division, if they would have clinched this thing a month ago, hypothetically. I mean, we'd be talking about probably, you know, Miguel Cabrera in that case breaking some records possibly, you know, and we'd be talking, you know, things here and there, little stats here and there as the baseball season, regular season wraps up into the playoffs. The fact that they haven't clinched the division yet, there's still some compelling headlines out there as far as, is Johnny Peralta going to be contributing? Is he even going to play? Is what's going to happen with Jose Iglesias at shortstop? There's really some loose ends to talk about that are compelling moving into the postseason for the Tigers.
Okay.
And, I mean, the Lions are 2-1. There's certainly some good things to talk about in the Motor City as far as football goes. Michigan State and the seasons that they've gotten themselves off to. So the fact, though, is that there's a lot of football, college, high school, and pro left, where the baseball season, the regular season, is kind of wrapping up. And with those intriguing headlines, I think that's taking precedence right now over some of the starts of the football season. And plus, you know, like Bob said, it's going to be 80 this weekend. We don't truly get into that football feel until it's 30 degrees and sleeting and, you know, shooting ice at us at football games. Then that's a true start of the football season.
Okay.
No offense to any of the huge football fans out there, because I'm more excited than anyone that football has started. But
so you're
just kind of a more easy transition from one to the other.
So you're saying it's not my imagination, and
probably
that in the people you know, people are talking more about baseball than football so far this year.
Well, I talk about all of it. So do the people.
Unrelentingly, yes.
So do the people I associate with. But I do get that feeling, and I understand what you're observing, and that's an accurate observation of what's going on.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming in.
No problem.
And I'm certain we'll have to chat tomorrow if the Tigers wrap this up tonight.
I will be here.
Good. Thanks, Carolyn. Carolyn Binder, Dr. Sports, as we call her. 590 WKZO time is 3:53. CBS News at the top of the hour. 71 degrees on the outside and no traffic issues to report. That's good news. Couple of minutes before 4 and CBS News. Well, next Tuesday, the open enrollment for Obamacare opens up to the public. And Health and Human Services today released a report summarizing the cost of premiums in states where the exchanges will be run by the federal government. And so far, the news continues to be good. The premiums are coming in below the predictions of the Congressional Budget Office. The CBO is a neutral, unpolitical organization, and they actually do their best work and are actually respected for doing very good work. And so far, premiums are coming in 16% lower than they were originally projected. The weighted average second lowest cost silver plan for 48 states is 16% below projections. And tax credits will make the insurance far more affordable for people, but 16% lower than expected.
Continues after CBS News and Kalamazoo's News from the WKZO.com newsroom on 590 WKZO Kalamazoo.